Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We want to pay tribute to the consistently outstanding work of longtime television journalist Betsy Bruce. As you probably know, Betsy signed off for the last time last Friday, ending a 45-year career. She not only covered the news, she made it as an early pioneer who opened the door for women who followed in her field. I'm happy to welcome Betsy. She was a former colleague, and I must say it was a lot easier, Betsy, working with you than it was when we were rivals covering politics in St. Louis. It's great to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, how does it feel sleeping in?
I haven't slept in yet.
Really?
No. I had a regular workout on Monday morning, so, you know.
Okay, but life is really changing for you.
It will. I've been warned I should not make any real commitments for the first 6 months.
Oh, really?
I don't know whether you experienced that when you took a break, but I'm sort of looking at it as a sabbatical, and then I'll make up my mind what else I want to do.
Do you have any sense of that? Well, let me start this way. Why did you decide now there was a time to move on, and where next?
Well, actually, I've done 46 years. I started in 1970.
Oh, pardon me.
But that's actually... There was a little mistake on the nice proclamation I got from the mayor's office. It said 45 years. So anyway, I was in my 45th for a while. And hit September, I started right after Labor Day as a writer-editor at Channel 4 in 1970. Yeah. You know, the year after a big political season is always a letdown for me personally because I love to cover politics. So I'd been sort of thinking about this anyway. And we were offered a very generous buyout by Tribune Company and put the two together. It just seemed like the right time because I don't have time to do some of the other things, the family writing, the memorabilia that my sisters and I want to treasure for our children, things of that sort there in Texas and Indiana. And you just can't plan all your vacations around those sorts of things. And so it got to be a point where I say, you know what, I don't want to leave. I still can do the work, but it's time to do some other things.
I had seen something written in connection with your retirement indicating maybe to get into the documentary field, something like that.
Well, what I would say is longer video pieces. Uh-huh. And I don't know that I've never done a documentary. I'm not so sure that's the direction I would go in, but something longer than a minute and a half and 2 minutes. And so obviously there's Channel 9 and HEC and groups like that. And you don't know. Some of the print operations are doing videos nowadays. I want to control my own deadlines.
Sure. Well, that'll be a nice feeling. And as someone indicated just before we went on the air, you're grateful not to be working today and being out in the cold weather
right.
We've had this last weekend.
Particularly Saturday night when I saw a couple of my colleagues who had clearly been called in on days off to work that nasty weather Saturday.
You know, you won't remember this, but I do. You were the first reporter I met when I came to St. Louis in November of 1971. We covered the dedication of the county court building. Ramsey Clark was in town. And I think you and I were the only reporters there that time. Anyway, that's my first introduction to Betsy Bruce. Times were really different in those days, the way we covered the news. Think back with me a little bit on what it was like and how it's changed since those early days.
Oh, my goodness. Well, of course, it was film then.
Yeah,
and you had to keep in mind that deadline of processing the film and then actually drawing it and then looking at it and then handing it over to an engineer to splice and glue it back together so that it could roll in the projectors. I wish I'd kept better notes. You know, I wish I'd kept a journal.
Yeah.
I finally started doing that after we switched at Channel 4 to electronic news gathering to the video cameras because that was the first in the world.
I was going to say that Channel 4 led the pack on all of that.
Right. It was the smallest of the five CBS-owned stations at the time. The FCC limited networks to owning only five local stations. So we were the guinea pig. We were the easiest, I suppose, to manage that kind of equipment change. And we switched. It was cold turkey.
And the equipment was a lot smaller, a lot easier to manage. We used to carry about 600 pounds worth of stuff in the early days.
Oh.
Lights and steamer trunks full of
for
equipment.
Film, you mean?
Yeah,
film. But actually, you know, the early video cameras were awfully heavy, too. You went from a three-man crew to a two-man crew, but that two-man crew was carrying a huge backpack battery. I mean, it looked like they were getting ready to step out from a moon capsule onto the surface of the moon, it was so much equipment.
And most of those guys, and they're all guys in those days, wound up with bad backs, as I would
imagine so, yeah. I can't imagine carrying some of that. And the tape recorder, you know, was slung over their shoulders.
Yeah. And today, you go out in the field with something you can carry in your hand.
You could. Yeah. That's right. I chose not to be an MMJ, a multimedia journalist. Yeah. I did. And actually, then I wound up having back surgery. So I've been very fortunate to come back from that.
You were the first female on-the-street reporter in St.
That's
Louis.
Right.
Did you feel a particular responsibility because of that?
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly, yes. It was a dream I had to be a broadcast journalist. And when I got to St. Louis and realized there were very few women on the air, Diane White did the weather at Channel 5, and Lee Shepard co-anchored the new news there with Dick Ford. Pat Fontaine was at Channel 4 doing weather and features. And Harriet Woods was doing public affairs kinds of programs at Channel 11 at the time. And so I was really – not that these other women didn't do stories in the field. They did. But I was the first full-time and the first to do really probably hard news on a regular basis. At least that's what one little ad tells me that I received from an old colleague who saved it and sent it to me.
Do you recall how you felt about that and again, the responsibility that
I certainly felt that I better not make a huge mistake. And that I couldn't walk away from the job and expect to come back to it. Mm-hmm. It was just that sense that you were at a certain time where it was important to lay a trail, lay a path. And and so I'm proud that I've succeeded at that, but it was certainly one where I made a decision early on to think very carefully about whether or not to have a family, even my husband and I, because you didn't know how that was going to blend with the responsibilities of the job. So we were late bloomers, as it turned out.
Yeah, and we were talking off the air. It was in 1988.
1988, our daughter was born.
Right. And I remember that because we were working on opposite sides of the street because that was the presidential year. Dick Ephardt and Paul Simon were running for president, so it was an active time.
And you probably were in Iowa and I wasn't.
As a matter of fact, yes, that was true. How do you manage a family under these conditions? I mean, you weren't out very long.
No. Actually, I was back working part time because I had some comp days to use, but they wouldn't really let you just come back part time. It was a strange circumstance with that. But I was back in time for Dick Ephardt's really last hurrah at the primary in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So six weeks full time, and then a few days a week.
Well,
one
of the things you mentioned off air was that I had recalled that you didn't show very much when you were pregnant. How you managed that, I don't know.
I have no idea. Genetics, I guess.
But that was kind of important to you. And in those days, I mean, men, I guess, and perhaps some women, don't realize what it was like in those days for someone like yourself who was carving a new niche and having to be careful in some ways.
That's true. And yet you look back, I had there's a young photographer, a female photographer at Channel 2 who looked at this original little ad, I guess it was, and talked about Betsy Bruce feminine and all this, and she's yelling and screaming, and they wrote that. Uh-huh. And life has changed. It certainly has. And I remember getting a notice once from a letter, I suppose, because it wasn't an email. You're taking a job away from a man.
Lord.
Things of that sort that basically you just had to brush aside and say, I'm not going to let it bother me.
Sure. Was there much of that sort of thing?
Oh, I don't know how much I didn't know about because social media, nowadays you'd hear everything. Every once in a while, I'd be asked if I was the film crew's stenographer or secretary because, of course, I was carrying a notebook that looked like a stenographer's notebook. things of that sort. But I was just so determined. And both my parents were journalists. My mother had been an early print journalist during the war in New York. And so I knew it could be done.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that because the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Didn't your parents own newspapers or have a newspaper?
No, my dad wound up editing a weekly paper before his untimely death of colon cancer at the age of 51 when I was in college. But my mother's father started Ohio University School of Journalism, George Starlasher. Uh-huh. She went there, and he started an internship program, which was probably the first in the nation at the time, with a little paper called the Athens Messenger. And that happened to be where my parents met, because my dad was the one of the few, if not the only, paid reporter at the time. And he'd gone to Mizzou for a couple of semesters.
How did they feel about your getting into the business?
Oh, I think they were excited about it, yeah. I mean, my dad knew that I was going to edit the student paper at Mizzou before his death. And my mother was always very proud to see the work I've done. And actually, she wound up doing some radio work on the public radio station in Buffalo, New York, later in her career.
Well, she must be very...
I should say in Athens, Ohio, not in Buffalo.
But. A very talented and smart lady if she took that route, needless to say. What would you tell a young woman today interested in getting into this business, particularly the way it is done today?
You really need to enjoy doing everything in the field because it's back to practically doing what you would do in a small market in the 80s. They want you to be able to handle a camera. They want you to be able to handle basically print writing for the internet, social media, which is a completely different approach, I think, to news often, and then to be a good writer and good on the air. It's going to be tough to find people, I think, who really do everything well. And I'm not so sure that's the best approach anyway.
Another issue is what is it going to be like 5 years from now, given how it's changed in just the last couple of years?
That's right. Who knows how competitive and we're running into this fake news problem. And people think anybody can be a journalist if you can simply tweet or send something out on Facebook. That does concern me. I don't think it serves the public well.
No. And then there's the online situation where everything seems to be leaning in that direction. So that's going to be playing an even more important role probably in the years ahead.
I think so.
What about writing? You know, young people today are writing in 140 character paragraphs, and using shortcuts to do that. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any change in the writing?
I can't say that I've really been occupied to be able to have the time to actually look at scripts and so on. I'm so busy meeting my own deadlines.
Sure.
At Channel 2, they do 13 hours of live broadcasts a day, Monday through Friday,
and
more than 80 hours a week. Uh-huh. Yes. So, but I do hear that some people are so busy they don't file scripts, and that's the problem. You know, if you're on the next shift and you need to take over that particular story, you don't have the background that you ought to have. And just like newspapers, you know, everything's online now. If that goes down, you can't run to the morgue, as they called it in the old days, where the newspaper clippings were filed and you could go research a story.
Sure. I hear that a lot in this job with authors, particularly historians who come through, who lament the fact that everything now is done by email and online. It's not preserved.
And
they relied so heavily on letters, for instance, to do their history and their historical research. Times have changed. Betsy Bruce is our guest. We're going to continue the conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Or send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Of course, we'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back with Betsy Bruce in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Betsy Bruce, who, as you know, has just retired from a 46-year career in television journalism here in the city of St. Louis. Looking back over those 46 years, I'm sure you've gotten this question many times. What stands out? What was the big story in all of that time?
Sadly, probably Ferguson. Yeah. And in an odd sort of way, I began covering protests at Mizzou as a student during the Kent State time period. And a little bit before that, there was a freedom of speech issue with the underground newspaper called the Columbia Free Press, and a graduate student named Barbara Papish. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I was editor of the student paper at the time, the Maneater. We always laugh about that, the Tigers, the man-eating Tigers, and had to make some decisions that were not easy about how did we describe what was written in that paper, the foul language that was in the headlines. And It really has a bookend in some respects to my career.
Was it tougher covering those stories at Mizzou than covering the Ferguson story?
Oh no, Ferguson was. Yeah. There was no serious physical danger at Mizzou. I mean, the young people were marching and protesting. And at one point, I remember the chancellor did call in some National Guard troops, but they sat on a bus. I remember seeing that. And I was not doing as much of the active reporting since I was editing at the time. But it was – no, I was actually in Ferguson working on the Saturday that Michael Brown was shot. And so I was there Saturday and Sunday and then – couple of days in the next week and then the next weekend as well. So I saw a great deal of that.
What were you doing there prior to his shooting?
Well, I mean, I was just on schedule to work that night, and they called me in early. My photographer got there ahead of me, but just driving into the area, even in a company car, was a little disconcerting. It was already becoming a completely different kind of crime scene than anything I'd ever seen before.
And driving in a vehicle that is identified as media sometimes is helpful, and oftentimes it is not.
It is not. I think I was in an unmarked SUV. I had never seen so many police cars at one scene in my life. That was the first tip that this was really unusual.
Do you think that we, and I mean the collective we now, as a journalistic community here, I don't want to say missed the boat, but there's been a lot of discussion about being caught by surprise by Ferguson, and that the collective we, were not reporting what was really going on in communities like that have come to light since that story broke.
We've gone back in our files to get video to as the court story evolved, the municipal court story, and we'd done a couple of things. We actually had some aerial shots of people wrapped around the Pine Lawn City Hall waiting for court night, which was just incredible.
Sure.
So the stories were there, but nobody put two and two together to say this is a critical problem. So in that respect, we missed hearing about it. And you would hear stories about bullying. You would hear stories about, you know, this officer stopped me and he mistreated me or disrespected me. And those are very difficult individual stories to do because it's one person's word against another. You have no video to support it. You know, nowadays you may at least have some cell phone video. But looking back, you know, over 15, 20 years, that was not available.
I think the white community was caught by surprise because it not fully cognizant of what was going on. The black community, it was no surprise at all because they had lived.
That's right. And you begin talking to some of your African American colleagues, people with, you know, multiple college degrees, and learning that, they got stopped by an officer just driving from their home, and they live in a nice suburb. And why in the world would you stop somebody for no reason?
I remember Don Johnson. You remember Don, a former colleague, telling stories about any time he went to a department store here in St. Louis, he was followed by a store detective or the equivalent because he was a potential shoplifter.
It's just very unfair.
Very unfair.
Horribly unfair.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have some folks want to say hi. We'll begin with Margaret calling from Soulard. Margaret, thanks so much for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I remember Betsy Bruce when I was watching the news in the mid-70s. And at that time, I was really kind of like trying to find out who I was, too, and how inspiring it was to see you on television. I remember you, and I remember Robin Smith as well.
Well, thank you very much. Robin was another early female broadcaster here in St. Louis. Sherry Banks worked with you at Channel 2.
Yeah.
Penny Crone worked at Channel 4. And There were one or two, I think, also at Channel 5. But we've evolved. Remember Kathy McDonald? She came to Channel 4.
Sure.
Yeah. And I had met you. I had ran into you. When was that? A year or two ago. And I remember kind of running into you on the street downtown. And you were busy doing your story then, too. So I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciated your being there so early and to have such a long career. It's very inspiring to me and to my daughter as well.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Margaret, thank you for the call. Do you remember a time when it changed for you as a female reporter where you would cover harder news stories? I mention that because early on, a lot of the women in the business were given the garden party kind of stories to cover, not the hard news. When did that change for you, or did you start right in that way?
I don't remember that kind of a change. I remember my very first news conference at City Hall with Mayor Cervantes and a photographer named Andy Werner. You remember Andy from Channel 2?
Oh, very well.
and Andy made a big deal about me being there, and I don't know whether there'd ever been another female reporter. Certainly there were women on the Post-Dispatch. They might have come to a news conference, but this was a, you know, maybe more television-oriented kind of a news conference, and made a big deal about me being there and insisted that I ask the first question. Well, of course, I was pretty nervous about that. But I just, you know, I loved covering politics. I one time dreamed of going to the network and doing that. Well, that didn't happen. So now I say, well, all the big stories came to us in St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned, there's another thing I wanted to bring up with you about not going to the network. It's been my observation that a lot of people came to St. Louis, and we can think of a lot of names, too. And this is a business where people want to climb the ladder and go to the network and all the rest of it. But so many people stayed in St. Louis and spent their career here. You're being one of them, Dick Ford, John Auble, and Julius Hunter, people like that. I wonder what it is about St. Louis that kept people here.
Well, I'm not sure other than the fact that because there was a CBS-owned and operated station for a long time here, the pay was maybe up a little bit because of that. But, of course, it happens in Chicago. It happens probably in places like Miami and New York and Los Angeles where people may have their whole careers there. But we are somewhat unusual, I suppose, we're about the 20th or 21st size market. We were the 18th for a while.
Yeah, and even higher than that. I think when I came, it was the 10th or 11th. So I always tell people.
People moved to the Southwest, haven't they?
That's right. And I tell people I hope I'm not responsible for the deterioration in the rankings there. Let's take another call. Tim joins us from Oakville. Go ahead, Tim.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Betsy, it's a pleasure to know you all these years over your work. Hope you enjoy your retirement.
Well, thank you so much. And I still do plan to do some writing. I'll have to figure out what.
But. Cool. A couple things you said since I called right before the first break. But it's so nice to remember you and to know you from in the news media from before the times when females, can I say this, in the news industry have become glamorous movie stars opposite of withered old men, where you were actually equal people and equal, in my mind. What the comments you said about when you first came in, a point that you remember so well in your career stands out was Kent State and how you were covering the protests here. We live in such tumultuous times now. We become so numb to so much of, like, you know, which was lead up to Ferguson and all that. You know, we come from a time where we were protesting the Vietnam War and all the inhumanities around the world. And Kent State just sticks so strong in my mind. My wife's from Cleveland. You know. Thank you for reminding Americans that we've lived with this for so long. And I think St. Louis is such a big media station, perhaps because we're still fighting the Civil War here.
Tim, thank you so much for the call. Do you want to comment on Tim's comments? He's a fan, obviously.
Well, I certainly appreciate his loyal viewership through the years. We forget that our country has been through multiple stages of unrest, labor union riots, the abolitionists prior to the Civil War created lots of controversy. So, you know, I'm hoping that our shared history and commitment to democracy will stand us in good stead. But, of course, you need a vocal and free independent media to do that. I will urge our new political leaders to be sure they do talk to reporters. Otherwise, their message isn't going to get out with much clarity.
There seems to be certainly a trend, a tendency to not do that at this present time, that using Twitter is more effective by Mr. Trump, for instance, than meeting with the press. It's been 145 days.
That's right. That's right. And yeah. And yet, you know, it may be our fault, too, in that in terms of how did the media listen to the public. Mm. And you've been here almost as long as I have in terms of covering things. We are flyover country when it comes to the national news media. I remember the flood in 73. They didn't show up until the water was starting to go down. Yeah. So they missed the tenor of the voting public terribly. They did a terrible job.
Some lessons were learned, I think. The question now is how to apply those lessons. Final question for you, Betsy, and now that you're out of it, what kind of a job do you think local television news is doing these days compared to any period you can think of looking backwards?
We often have to do stories under such huge deadline pressure that I worry that we are missing a portion of it. Mm-hmm. And I always thank my producers for putting up with me because I do stretch my deadlines to get that last, you know, piece of information maybe to balance a story. And I'm very worried about that. But in general, I think, you know, certainly the news that I see, and obviously I'm limited to pretty much two stations, 2 sure. and 11, we've done a very good job. The quality of the video and the editing capabilities have just grown enormously in terms of what you can do in the field. Sometimes we spend too much time on crime.
I was just going to mention that. That's my observation.
Yeah. I mean, it makes it seem as if everybody's in danger all the time, and that's not true. But that's happened. We've been through these cycles before. I remember when there was a Mean Streets kind of a logo that was used at KTVI, and I wasn't happy with that at that time either.
Nor were various vendors in the community, because people wouldn't come out at night or go out to eat or go out to shop or all the rest of it. Well, times have changed, and Betsy, we have to bring our time to a close here. It's been a pleasure seeing you again.
Good to see you.
I hope it's not the last time, and I hope you are able to do whatever it is you want to do from this point on.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you've done for this community and journalism. It's much appreciated.
Good to talk to you.
That's Betsy Bruce. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.